It was a bright winter morning, the sun shining with a sharp jab of cold in the wind off the lake. Chicago looked swell, like a beautiful woman with an ice pick in her stocking top. I was driving along Lakeshore Drive in my old Buick. I was wearing the new dark blue pinstripe with trench coat and snap brim fedora. It was everything the well-dressed private eye ought to be. I was calling on $100 million. The invitation had arrived in my office a few hours earlier. It was my first day in business, and I was sitting behind my new desk wondering what the hell to do next. The desk itself wasn't new, it came with the office. The previous occupant was in the insurance business, until someone canceled his policy with three slugs from a Saturday night special in a Southside speakeasy. Suddenly shy a tenant and a month's rent, the landlord had rented me the office at a bargain rate and thrown in the fixtures and fittings for free. I was now the proud owner of a hat rack, a worn-out carpet, a cigarette-scarred wooden desk, one swivel and two rickety kitchen-type chairs, and a beat-up green filing cabinet filled largely with Chicago air. The desk was pretty empty too, except for the bottle of bourbon. Well, the label said bourbon. I was just deciding that it was too early for a drink, but I'd go ahead and have one anyway, when my first business opportunity arrived. It arrived in the shape of two hard-eyed characters in black topcoats and identical pearl-gray felt hats with broad black hatbands. The topcoats hung open to reveal dark suits, white shirts, and striped ties. In certain criminal circles, gaudy vests, loud ties, and diamond tie-pins were a thing of the past. The big fellow liked the hired help to look respectable. The getup had changed, but the manners were the same as ever. They shoved the door open without knocking and stepped forward, shoulder to shoulder, sneering down at me. Both were beefy and blue-jawed, one tall, the other short and stocky. "Morning, gents," I said cheerfully. "What can I do for you? Lost dogs? Missing mothers?" "You do have mothers." The tall hood said, "They told us you was a wise guy, Decker." The thick-set one said, "We gotta come all the way downtown to this dump to listen to cheap wisecracks from a cheap peeper." He spat on the carpet, which needled me more than somewhat. "Hang on till I send for a spittoon," I said. "Try to remember you're not at home." "On your feet, Seamus," said the tall one. "We're going for a ride."
"One way?"
"Someone wants to see you."
Welcome back to the Hamster Book Club. My name is Joe Ford, and as ever, it is my delight to be here today with the glorious Andrew Batty. Hello, Andrew.
Hello.
And the even more, well, I say even more glorious. I'm sorry, I don't mean that. The equally glorious. Now, let me get this straight. Luke Sims Jenkins.
That's correct.
Yes.
And yes, I will take the first spot of the glorious on the glorious podium. Why not?
Well done. You did choose the glorious dead last time, didn't you? Someone did.
Yes, that was the guy had for the Eighth Doctors.
Oh, thank you very much. Jeez, I'm getting everyone mixed up now. In fact, let's get this over and done with before we even talk about anything else. I know you heard the end of that episode, Luke, so do you have anything to say to me? No?
Now you put me on the spot. See, I remembered that part which saved you. Now you remember referencing a part that probably annoyed me and I can't remember it now.
You know, the trouble is I can't say no to people. So essentially everyone listening, this is incredibly indulgent.
Oh, yes.
Everyone said, let's get on the Big Finish bandwagon and do goth opera. And I'm going, yeah, sure. And then, unfortunately, yes. When another guest listened to my last episode with you, heard that we're doing Blood Harvest and goth opera, and I got a very harshly worded message saying, excuse me?
I feel like I've already felt that gentleman's pain. So I'm still like waiting for your, Minagra episode to drop. Someone else has a similar taste in books as me, I guess, or just great ideas.
I think that fella's forgotten all about it, if I'm honest. So we may do it yet, you know.
I see that you're going to do Time and Relative as well. I was like, ah, that was on my list. Yeah, that's never mind. And
someone said the Dalek Factor as well, which I think is also a...
I haven't got that one, so I don't care.
Oh, fair enough. We've established that Andrew's got a lot of books here, and about half of them have been read.
I'd say more than that. I've read the BBC ones. I've got more of a dent in.
Have you done one
I read yet? Stuff that isn't Doctor Who as well.
Have you done one of these where you haven't read the book before? I don't remember you saying that you... Oh, no. Cool. Well, we're going to have to do it one day, aren't we?
We will, yeah.
We should choose one of those new adventures that's getting dusty on your shelf.
I should do.
But how do you feel about Neil Penswick?
No, I'm not falling into that trap. I'm not falling into that pit.
Oh, Jesus Christ. William Blake, fuck off. All right. We are here today to talk about Blood Harvest by Terence Dix. And we've been chatting a little bit on our thread. And I know we've got three diverse and interesting opinions coming up. But before we do, I'm getting a bit desperate with my icebreaker questions. So I asked the two of you, but did I give you more than 30 minutes this time?
Yeah.
Yeah, I asked you asked last night if we had a question, Mr. Joe. But I didn't see it until I woke up this morning anyway.
It only came about 3 hours ago, I think. So I'm getting better. But it was to select a scene from a Doctor Who book that you just happen to love. And I would like to throw this over to Andrew first, please.
Okay. So my one, I was trying to think of something that was like really like moving or powerful or dramatic. But then my mind just went a bit blank. So the moment that I chose was actually one which I think just kind of like illustrates how into these books I was as a teenager. So I chose a moment from The Domino Effect. Doctor Adventure, which I don't think anyone would probably like one of those dramatic, memorable moments. But this one just stuck out in my head because I remembered that during this era of the EDAs, when I was reading them all as they came out, I used to write little notes. Interesting bits, and I used to put them inside the cover.
Gorgeous.
Amazing.
And they were mainly sort of bits about the story arc and what I thought was going to happen next and that kind of stuff. So in The Domino Effect, there is a scene where Fitz bumps into a mysterious woman with red hair, and it's like about half a page long. She's sort of, it's implied that she's just like maybe stolen something from a jeweler's, and he kind of looks at her and maybe recognizes her, and then she disappears. So it was kind of like one of those little moments, which is like, this is clearly important to the arc. What did that mean? They're going to come back to it eventually. So I wrote down on this little piece of paper, like all my theories about who it was.
Amazing.
So redhead, do you want me to read verbatim?
Hell yeah.
We want the lot, baby.
Redhaired woman steals diamond and emerald ring from auction house, sees Fitz, ignores him. Present in cafe before explosion, tells Fitz to fuck off. I don't think she used those words. I was just being an edgy teenager. Leaves cafe, bumps into Angie, her eyes widen. Recognition? Question mark. Possibilities, tricks, compassion, Juliet, Scarlet. So I was trying, it was clearly someone we'd met before. I think the red hair was throwing me off. So I was like, it's not tricks, she doesn't have red hair. And I think I wanted it to be Compassion, who didn't really come back for much longer. But there's more detailed breakdown on the back of like all my reasons for and against it being each character.
Oh.
So, yeah, it just demonstrates what a fucking nerd I was when I was like 14, 15 years old when this came out. But, yeah.
Andrew, I loved you before you told me all of that. Now I'm just obsessed with you. Do you have notes in all of these books?
The ones from this era, I think because it was a continuing series, I used to like write these little notes. I also used to have like spreadsheets and like a Word document where I'd write little reviews and like tag which characters were in each book. Yeah, it was tragic. Absolutely.
Can we not just do a new segment on our book club episodes, the three of us, where we call it Andrew's Notes, and every time you have to bring out one of your notes, and oh, how glorious. Yeah,
I'll have to have a rummage to see if I can find any more. I also, even nerdier than that, I used to keep the receipts in the books.
Where was that one from?
This one didn't have one, but there are definitely some in the other ones. But some of them have like faded, even though they've been like stuck in a book. I guess like the ink they use on receipts isn't there to last the test of time.
You so I just have blank pieces of paper. Were you like a Waterstones boy?
A Waterstones boy. I either got my mum to pick them up for me from like an independent bookshop near the school where she worked, because they used to get them in. If she put an order in, they'd get them like maybe 2 weeks before the publication date sometimes, which was very exciting. Or I'd go to...
Yeah, that's... I'm jealous.
It was either an Ottercars or a Blackwell's. It was in Arndale Centre in Eastbourne, where you live, Joe.
That's where I work.
Yeah. So it was, yeah, it then turned into an HMV after that. It was like one of the, it was that shop. And it was briefly a bookshop, but it wasn't Waterstones.
Oh, I can tell you now, there's no shop in Eastbourne's Arndale, which is now called The Beacon.
It's always the Arndale in my mind.
Doctor Who books out 2 weeks before, because if they did, man, oh man, I'd be snapping them up. Well, Luke, what have you got for us?
I had a kind of a silly answer and a serious one. My silly answer I came out with first, and let's just put my obligatory Steve Lyons reference in the episode. I won't read the whole thing, but
I'm going to put a chime in, you know, every time you say Steve Lyons.
Have a drink. So I won't read the whole thing. It's fucking hilarious. It is, just go to B on your useless encyclopedia and read the entry for Batman.
Read it.
All right, then. Batman, one of the world's first costume heroes. Batman was created by Bob Kane and premiered in Detective Comics issue 27 in 1939, graduating to his own title in 1940. The nocturnal career of millionaire Bruce Wayne brought him into contact with such colorful and enduring villains as the Joker, Penguin, the Riddler, and Catwoman. Many of these were given a new lease of life by the fondly remembered 60s TV series starring Adam West and Burt Ward as sidekick Robin. The comic books introduced Gordon's daughter, Barbara, and as a second Batgirl. The first was tennis ace Betty Kane, so that she could spin off into her own show. Michael Keaton and Val Kilmer have more recently portrayed Batman on the big screen. Now I feel old now. With George Clooney set to take over, an animated series in a similar style has also proved successful. Batman now stars in four monthly comic books. The latter-day writers have emphasized the Dark Knight aspect of his persona, with storylines such as the Joker, Joker's murder of the second Robin, Jason Todd, and the breaking of Batman in the classic Nightfall series. He is mentioned in Inferno and the Time Monster.
That whole book is as irreverent as that, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm like, yes, I know all this about Batman. Get to the Doctor Who. He's mentioned in Inferno and Time Monster. Yeah.
Do you remember the line in Inferno?
I don't.
Andrew?
I do, because someone literally just posted a video of it on Twitter.
No.
It's the... it was TARDIS Monkey just posted a little clip, that exact little clip where, John Pertwee says, do you expect me to burst off into space like in a rocket like Batman? And just the intonation of it is very funny. I haven't done it justice.
Somehow, Luke, the stars are in Convergence and TARDIS Monkey and you are somehow talking about this exact same thing at the same time.
Some kind of weird alignment happening right there, yeah.
Okay, so that's your funny one.
Yeah, so like the first thing that popped into my mind was The Burning. I'd been off the EDAs for a little bit at the time, so I think by the time I got back into them, maybe Earthworld had come out, maybe Vanishing Point. So I went back and I was like, oh, a new Jumping On Point, all right, fine. I eventually went back and read them because there's more fits in those stories, but yeah, that's just what I did. But yes, so new jumping on point. Wasn't sure what to expect. I knew Gallifrey was gone, and wish it stayed gone. But I feel like reading that was, what's going on? What's going to happen here? And it's towards the end of the book. I can't remember the exact specifics, but there's like a something really cold and brutal the Doctor does towards the end of the book. I think it's like someone being trapped under something and just burning. And look, granted, I'm pretty sure this person deserved it. But still, like, just to see the Doctor just kind of watch this guy burning and then just leave. It's like, all right, what's going on here? Because he did feel a little Doctor-ish, but not too much that he'd feel the same, but just enough. So when but it's the Doctor. So when he comes out and does something shocking like this, I'm like, oh, where are they going with this? And I liked that moment because it's setting up like he's kind of just woken up. He doesn't. It's like Hartnell in the first story. He's a bit of a prick, isn't he? So he's not much of a hero, is he? And then he with his friends and stuff, he becomes like the good guy we love. So this is him trying to figure himself out, and stomping on people is one of the things he'll do if he has to.
Sort of pushing away from that. He's not just the puppy dog Eighth Doctor anymore. He's going to surprise you. And they did that a couple of times throughout that run, didn't they?
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's a great choice. Well, interestingly enough, I went to the Eighth Doctor books as well. What a surprise. It's from Time Zero by Justin Richards, which I think is a fantastic book. And I did want to choose the bit where Angie Kapoor realizes that she's in a plane heading towards the Alps without a driver, and she's literally about to smash into it and die, which is one of the most exciting end of chapters ever. I'd defy anyone to read that and not go on. But actually, what I want to talk about is the bit earlier in the book where Angie's left. And she discovers through the sort of timey-wimey nature of the story that Fitz goes on this expedition to the Antarctic and dies. And she's at home and she phones her mum, I think it is, and basically to tell her mum Dave's dead, her boyfriend, because she's just got home. So this is the first chance she's had to have this conversation with her mum. And she cries her way through the call and she's really upset. And the end of the chapter, the line kills me every time. She's talking about Dave, but she wasn't talking about Dave. It was Fitz or something like that is the end of the chapter. And I just remember reading that and being like really, really sad. And I realized just how close I was to those characters in those books at that point and how really sad I was that she was going. So I'm pretty pleased actually the whole multiverse shattered by the end of that book and she was forced to hang around for another six books.
Yeah.
But it's a great book, Time Zero. I think Justin Richards' character work is sorely undervalued. And that's just a really good example of it.
I'm always absolutely astonished by your memory for these books, Joe.
Why? I've written a lot of reviews about them. So,
And like in Blood Harvest, the one we've just done, there was a scene that you described in the last podcast, and you got it like verbatim. Like,
oh, did I? What did I say? I can't remember.
The one about the cop describing the TARDIS dematerializing.
Oh, the Weasel.
Like, that's right.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, like. Yeah.
I haven't wasted my life, I'll tell you.
Well, I think it's odd, like my memory for the books, like I love them, but I find it hard to keep them in my head. I think because you can't see them. Maybe I'm just like more of a visual person. So yeah, I remember the broad strokes of the books, but not like I don't remember that bit with Angie, but it sounds brilliant. Makes me want to read Time Zero again.
Well, I'll tell you what, coming through a book club near you, Time Zero featuring Andrew and Luke. I know the two of you won't complain about doing an Eighth Doctor book. my God, I was going to say something. It's completely gone out of my head. No. You did remember a lot about the Scarlet Empress, though. Mind you, have read that about 15 times.
That is true.
Yeah. The ultimate holiday novel. What? That's a beautiful segue to start talking about the book we are here to talk about. And it's our first Terence Dix, isn't it? It's not my first Terence Dix because I did that last time on The Eight Doctors, although... I'll be honest, there's a few similarities to the Eight Doctors towards the end of this book, but we'll get there. Let's start with initial thoughts then, before we sort of go beneath the surface or in between the covers or whatever metaphor you choose. Luke, what was your overall impression of Blood Harvest on this read?
Okay. I like a lot of it. There's some things in it that I don't like, and maybe my having just read Warrior's Gate before this book might color some of that. So be ready for that. But I like it. Like, he bounces around a little bit, Terry, in this book. He drops things, some couple of things like a hot potato, notably 1930s Earth and the Vampire Planet. But there's just a readability to it. Like, even if you don't particularly care for this one section or this one scene or this one character, it doesn't matter. It's so readable and it's just so engaging. It's like, I feel like by the time I finish the thought, I don't like this character, I finish the chapter and I'm like, oh, it's Benny. Oh, let's go. So he knows how to keep things moving, which is always beneficial. This great character work for most of the characters, which I really like. And it's funny. He's not afraid to make a bit of fun out of himself and a bit out of Doctor Who as well as a whole. So, I thought it was a decent time.
Take the mickey out of himself. Did you not read that bit where, you know, they're doing that ritual charm at the beginning of each chapter, and then eventually someone just goes, can we just forego the ritual charm, please? It's getting a bit tedious now. Exactly at the point where I was thinking that. What about you then, Andrew?
Yes, similar to Luke, I think. I enjoyed it. It's a good sort of action adventure. Very fanish, like Terence being a fan of his own work.
quite like the Five Doctors.
Yes. But, you know, like, it's his stuff. Like, I don't begrudge him mining his own material like that.
Fan wanking yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's not go there, please.
But yeah, I think it's quite illustrative of the wild tone of the new adventures. Like, it just veers into some strange territory, and there's some very dodgy stuff in this book. Like, very problematic. And yeah, sometimes I think, like, oh, I wish that they'd like reprint the best of the new adventures. Like, you could not reprint this book without making some very significant changes. It's an odd one, but on the whole, I enjoyed it for what it was.
I thought this was super fun, and like the Eight Doctors that I did last time, I race for it. I just think his prose is just so easy to read, although I've got a few points to make about his prose, which we'll get to later. I thought one plot worked better than the other plot, and then, like Lou said, I was very baffled when both those plots were dropped and we headed to Rassilon's tomb at the end of the story. I was like, okay, what? How did we go from 1930s gangsters to Rassilon's, you know, and all that continuity? But somehow, I don't know how, because any other writer, I just wouldn't excuse that sort of leap. He makes it work. And along the way, like, there's funny lines. I was roaring with laughter a couple of times. And I thought there was some really fun stuff with the new adventures regulars as well. I don't get to have a lot of fun in these books, so it's quite refreshing, really. Okay, well, do you know what? You made a good point there. So let's start negative. What would have to be removed if this was published today, Andrew?
Well, the main thing is the attempted rape of Ace, which is just like, why is that there? Like, I feel like with this book, Terence Dix is kind of like, okay, I'm writing a new adventure. I'm going to do what I want to do, but I'm also going to put in the stuff that they want for the new adventures. And apparently one of those things is sexual assault. And it's just...
It's not the last time as well. He does it in Catastrophia. And he has a whole gang of rapists going around in Warmonger.
Don't read Warmonger. Just don't do it.
That was one of my recommends in one episode, you know. Look, sorry.
Yes. So it's just a really horrible moment and just feels like it's not... It's out of place tonally and just doesn't need to be there. There's moments of racist language as well. And some of that is in the dialogue of the characters, which, you know, you could say this is a book set in the 1920s. it's, you know, it's representing the awful attitudes of the time. But then there's also racist language in the third person narration. So it's just a bit, it's icky. And it's like, yeah, odd to find that in a Doctor Who book.
I thought there was some weird classism as well in the e-space scenes.
Oh, there definitely is.
Romana
well.
And Bernice were treating these filthy peasants as the lowlifes that they are.
Yeah, and his take on Romana is odd as well. The way she's kind of, she's a bit, he kind of decides that she's this sort of aristocrat and she's kind of siding with the lords. There's the bit where she sits on the lord's table and Benny's watching her and talking about how that's like a natural fit for Romana, whereas the Doctor wouldn't do that. And it just feels like, I don't know if that's the character that I got from the TV show or like where she was intended to go. There's a lot of sexist language as well. Like I'll get off this point soon and talk about things I did like, but yeah, there's probably about six times that female characters get called bitches in this book. There's even a time lord calls Benny a bitch. It's like, what? And yeah, just the way that Romana is kind of like, she's just a bit shit in this book. Like, she really like messes up and you kind of think like, yeah, there's just this weird sexism going on with female characters where they're kind of not allowed to be as capable as the Doctor, which is odd when it's Romana when she's left and she's meant to be this more experienced version of the character.
Do you think these elements then are, you know, we're not saying Terence Dix is a terrible old sexist and racist and classist, you know? Although I'm wondering if there are elements because he's of that generation.
Get rid of Liz Shaw, so you know,
appalling lapse in judgment. Do you think this is him trying to be edgy for this range by sort of adding some more adult stuff into it, getting it wrong, but trying it out?
I think so. And I think it's, you know, it's taking a lot of stuff that would have just been acceptable in kind of pulpy fiction and just putting them into a book uncritically and just being like, oh, Doctor Who is for like this audience now. This stuff is what this audience wants. I'll give it to them. And it's just very jarring at times, particularly when you think, oh, it's lovely Terence Dix, author of the novelizations who got children reading and also, then writes this.
It's brutally violent as well, this.
Yeah, Ace shoots somebody in the head.
The Doctor doesn't say a thing. Oh, Ace. That's our bar. Go and clear it up.
Oh, Dorothy.
What about you then, Luke? But what were your sort of biggest concerns or issues with this?
All right. So maybe I was about to start with like, maybe it says something about me, but Andrew just kind of mentioned it. I kind of grew up reading Terence Dix books as a young boy. So it's kind of weird to read a book that's still Doctor Who. So it's not an original fiction. Like, I started with kids' books. Here's something completely new and original, but it's more adult. No, here's Doctor Who books. Here's another Doctor Who book. And, oh, okay. The Doctor's, like, made some sexist remark about his secretary. And I like that. I actually like that little bit because it's kind of out of place and cheeky. And the Doctor's like, well, he's fitting in because he's having a meeting with the mayor. But he's like, oh, if Ace had heard that, she would have beat the shit out of me. I think like Benny would too. I think Romana would. I think most of your companions would have boxed you over the head for that. That was about kind of cheeky. But yes, there is it's like, the sex is a little strange. I can handle the violence a little more. Like you kind of expect that, I guess, in a book for it to be a bit more violent in tone. But yeah, I was just like, all right, he's put all these dirty kind of weird things in this book and I'm just like, this is the guy I read when I was like 9. This is kind of strange. So I'm glad you also picked up on that, Andrew. Also, I like some of the moments with Romana. Andrew even mentioned one in our chat where her and Benny are going on horseback riding through the van. He doesn't even name the vampire planet. Can we get a name for that planet, please?
No, it'll just be a terrible space name, wouldn't it, for a planet?
Xandor or something like that. Yeah.
If it was a Terry Nation script, it'd probably be like Vampirion. Or
yeah.
Maculon.
Bang or something like that. Yeah.
But so I'd probably take a few. That's probably why a lot of these haven't been reprinted or put up on as like or, just books you can buy on your phone or something like that, because it's a family show and they don't probably want to bring out all of these sexy books. But yeah, I think it is Terry trying to ape the style of the new adventures, because like, oh, let's do this little bit in the first person. Now let's put a bit more sexiness in this section of the book and things like that. So I think that's Terry all over if he's doing a Doctor Who story in an era that he's not from. He's still pretty capable of aping that style. And I don't think the new adventures are any exception in that. So he's got the tone of the books pretty well.
I think my biggest objection, weirdly enough, wasn't the sexism or the racism or the classism. It was, so here's my issue with how this is written, is we get three checks on every thought. So like, there's a point where, I can't remember the girl's name, is it Magda? One of the girls they suspect has been turned into a vampire, right? So Bernice thinks, oh, I think she might be a vampire when she turns up. And then she says it in dialogue to everybody. Oh, I think she might be a vampire. And then we go to great pains for the next scene to prove that she... And I'm like, you know what? I get that the new adventures are usually very obscure and we can't figure out what the fuck is going on in them, because they're all being written by arty writers that are trying to be a bit pretentious. But Terrence, you do not need to explain yourself three times. And I can... when I noticed that, I was like, he does it in every scene. They think it, they say it, and then they prove it. And I'm like, one's enough. Just prove it, you know, in a dialogue. So it's a very odd approach. So I was
the master of padding, so maybe that's part of it.
Well, I'm wondering if he's talking to kids rather than adults. And then I'm wondering if this isn't the range for him, and maybe the past Doctor range is. I don't know.
He never wrote for it. He never wrote for The Missing Adventures, which is strange.
He did in the BBC range, though, didn't he? He wrote a couple over that, World Game and Catastrophia.
And Players, I think, as well, yeah.
But I was like, you know what? Maybe if I was like four, then I'd need that. I need the triple explanation for everything. But, you know, 43, I'm going, will you get on with it already, please? So that was my biggest objection. Well, do you think, Andrew, do you think Terrence is suited to the new adventures?
Yeah, I think he's perfectly capable of it. I think, like Luke was saying, he adapts his style to fit the era that he needs to. I think it's a pretty standard NA. Like, it's got like all the kind of tropes in it. And I think, he makes a good go at it.
What do you think, Luke? Well, you kind of just said, didn't you, that you think he can adapt to it?
I think so. I don't think this has quite the impact that, say, Exodus does. And maybe that's because that's the second book and Genesis just kind of stank, you know. So the extra thing of like, hey, Terry is here, and hey, don't worry, this one's actually good.
That was really good. Oh, Exodus was excellent.
Exodus is fantastic. Little War Games sequel too, which I didn't expect. So that blew my mind as a
plagiarism. Kid. Sorry. Self-plagiarism, though. It's all
right. That's right. And I remember liking Shakedown a little more as well. This was one I didn't have as many fond memories of. Not in a bad way. It's just some books I remember and some I don't. So I think he apes the style maybe a little better in Exodus. Maybe that's even before the style's really set. I don't know. But he's got the tone. It feels new adventures. Hey, Doctor, what's going on? Can't tell you yet. you know, because then like the book would be like 10 pages. You tell him what's going on. I would dealt with it.
Well, to be fair to him, he does sort of keep her in the loop around about a third in. He's like, I want to find out who will stop this sort of alliance, you know. And that was the point I was like, I see what we're doing now. We're trying to see who in both these stories would actually be doing this. Bless him.
He loves his He loves his gangster movies, by the way. Especially Brian De Palma's The Untouchables. Because, you know, there's that line that Connery has, you know, he brings a knife, you bring a gun. He sends one of you guys to the hospital, you put one of their guys in the morgue. One of the characters in this book says stuff like that. There's a few other, like, I love that movie, sorry. So there's a few other little winks and nods to that movie in it.
Oh, this was made for you then, like all those sections.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty cool. I like a lot of old noir things as well. So I like the Decker perspective. I can not overlook, but I can understand like his archaic kind of language, especially in terms of like sexism and race and things like that. He's a guy from the 20s and 30s and a white man as well. So he's going to have attitudes that are not great. And I think there is one N-word in it. He doesn't say it, but some gangster says it in response to some kind of shop cleaner who cleans up flowers and things. And I don't like seeing that in a Doctor Who book, but in the context of the 30s America, it's probably going to be bouncing around. But yeah.
I said about I wrote a note, just Terrence is having fun, firing off cliches, unencumbered by subtlety, and straight from a comic book. Because, you know, it is picture postcard, detective noir. But I love those scenes. The only thing that confused me was why we started in the first person and then dropped it. And then we went back to the first person maybe once more. And I'm like, was it supposed to be written?
Only like three instances, maybe four. Yeah. And they're very short. The first one's the longest. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, I feel like he definitely could have pushed that further, had more of those first-person Decker scenes. And then even in those, I think he could have pushed the kind of pastiche a little bit more. You have the kind of turns of phrase at the very start of the book with the, I shared this in our group chat, but the Chicago looked swell, like a beautiful woman with an ice pick in her stocking top. Which are just those kind of like, those ridiculous, like, hard-boiled detective fiction things. Like,
there wasn't enough of that, though, was there? No.
There wasn't, really could have gone with, like, more of that kind of Raymond Chandler tone, I think.
I can see him at his typewriter thinking, oh, bloody, bargain hunt's on at 1 o'clock. I can't be asked to do this first person anymore. Let's just go. I'll do what I normally do. But he's still having fun, I think, in those sections. He, you know, the shootouts. He very much romanticises Al Capone, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. But, I have to.
Who hurt Terrence for that love affair to start?
if one of the more pretentious New Adventures writers had written this, I can imagine it being like, all right, we're on the vampire world, and they're all written in from the perspective of Benice's diary, and then you get to Earth, and they're all written from the perspective of Decker as a private eye. I feel like that's an avenue you might have gone if it was a different writer holding onto this. Benny doesn't even write a diary entry in this, I don't think.
But you've only got to look at All Consuming Fire, which is Watson writing that, isn't it, in the first person, to show just how effective that approach can be if you do it sort of long term.
I love that book too, by the way. It's Andy Lane. Don't get me started. He's one of my favorites as well. But yeah, he does love Al Capone. It's funny to me, like, you get some people in fandom being like, Winston Churchill wasn't quite like that. He has his bad sides and all that kind of stuff too. And he does, and that's fine. I understand that.
You heard my victory of the Daleks episode, then, did you?
Yeah, it's a valid criticism to have. But, oh my God, imagine this being on the telly and Al Capone's being portrayed the way he is. I think a lot of fans might be a little apoplectic about that. But yeah, I mean, he
did some pretty dodgy things, right? But Terrence is like, making jokes with like, oh, Al Capone, you're innocent for once. Oh, so I am. You know, I'm like,
and then he smashes someone's head in with the baseball bat.
Smashes his hitman. Oh my God. I'm like, yeah. And the doctors are standing there and he gets to watch. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I say that. Oh no, go on, Andrew.
I was gonna say I think I learned quite a lot of history from this book.
Yeah, he does the potted history of Al Capone, doesn't
he? Yeah. On like the extras for Horror Fan Rock, where he's always like, I got the British Boys Book of Lighthouses, and you know, that was my research. I feel like he got the British Boys Book of Gangsters.
I've read it, so I'm bloody well putting it in, all right.
Exactly. So yeah, and I was reading like the Wikipedia entries for Al Capone and like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, and I was like, oh, okay, like this all happened. It's not really a chunk of history that I know very much about, so I feel educated.
They could have done more with that, though, right? Like, we could have actually done some of those things instead of this nonsense with vampires.
I like the vampires.
Well, we're getting there. Don't worry, we'll get there. I've got to say, the thing I loved about the Chicago scenes, though, was the doc, because that's what they call him, isn't it? The doctor's set up in the jazz bar with Ace as his, like, hired gun. I know it's sexist, but, man, the idea of him in that fedora, playing cards, you know, drinking liquor, and Ace in a slinky black dress with a machine gun. I just would love to see McCoy and Aldred. I mean, they probably couldn't do it, to be fair. But I'd love to see them try and pull that off. That would just look amazing. I just thought, as a romantic idea, putting the Doctor in that setting and sort of establish when the book starts, which is very New Adventures, I thought that was wonderful.
There's that visual of the Doctor several times in the book sitting in his bar with either a drink that he just sips or doesn't touch, and there's a smouldering cigarette in an ashtray that no one's ever seen put to his mouth, but it's always kind of there as part of the show. Of it's just like a neat little visual. And
you love the joke about he makes the beer in the swimming pool and the whiskey in the bathtub, and they're like, no, seriously.
That's right. That's like, where does he get his alcohol from? Yeah, he's distilled it all in the TARDIS. Did he distill it? Like, I'm a nerd. I would have hooked up the TARDIS food machine to the swimming pool and been like, I'll just press scotch. 20 years.
I mean, it's a time machine that's bigger inside than that. I'm going to go anywhere in time and space. Just go with it, all right?
Yeah, right. Distilled
it has a special whiskey-making bathtub somehow. The bathtub of Rassilon or something.
I want to go swimming in the Doctor's pool before he changes it back to water. Thank you very much.
I dread to think what you're like when you've had a few. What are you like? No, don't tell us. Don't tell us. Andrew, I interrupted a thought then. What was you going to say?
Yes. I was going to say, when I was doing my homework on this book, I read a little bit about the conception of it. And you know how we were talking, you were saying how you just wanted to get back to the gangsters. I think I preferred the vampire planet bit. But at one point, I think Terence Dicks originally pitched it as one novel. But at one point, it was going to be two novels, one 1930s and one vampire planet one. And then that idea kind of morphed into this being part one and goth opera being part two. But that's maybe why they kind of feel a bit married together.
Well, how did you feel I'm going to use that word, juxtaposed together? Is it jarring?
I think I was waiting for it to be pulled together in a really clever way, and I don't think that quite happened. I feel like the reveal of the villain with his very Terranation name of
Agonol.
Who feeds on agony. like,
remember, Bargain Hunt's on at one, all right?
He was just a bullshit villain. It was just kind of like
the worst.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of like the god of shit stirring, wasn't he? He just sort of like,
I do it because I enjoy it.
Yeah. It was kind of like, I want some bad shit happening here. I want some bad shit happening here. There's going to be someone stirring shit, and they're in both places at once. And it's kind of like, okay.
There's right. Tenuous, and then there's this. Right? Yeah.
In my head, the villain of this was the Great Vampire. I kind of remembered that there was like this sort of glowy-eyed figure in Chicago. And then I was like, oh, okay, so clearly like the Great Vampire has resurrected. That's what's happening. And the Great Vampire has resurrected, but just sort of sits around in a vat of goo and then gets exploded at the end.
Imagine, though, Andrew, if he came out in 1930s Chicago.
Yeah, that's what I was expecting, that there'd be some sort of dimensional portal and, yeah, the blood harvest would happen in Chicago. But it was weird.
It's already happening. He's just got to go and lap it up.
Yeah. yeah, exactly. But I was expecting it to be more vampire-y, because given that it, like the two books are the sort of vampire books, The vampires are a bit incidental to this one. It's just that he set half of it on the vampire planet, but the vampires don't really intersect with the Chicago bit at all, which was a surprise to me, even though I've read it before. But as we've established, I have no memory.
Before we skip over to the vampire planet, I was going to say one last thing about the Chicago scenes, which I cannot stress enough, I loved. I was hooting with laughter and skipping through those pages. And I feel like that's where in this book he was having the most fun. Like, he was enjoying himself, a sort of luxury. He's obviously seen 100 of those movies. And he's just like, he's just putting in every cliche going, I did really love, and I have no love for New Ace at all. I think she's an appalling character that was very rarely tolerable. I love the sort of almost romance with her and Decker, where they're just throwing insults at each other all the time, but sort of developing a respect for each other. I thought that was kind of nice. I think Terrence can write well for women when he wants to. So I quite like that. I thought it was quite charming.
Yeah, I mean, Benny is quite well written in this book. Like, she's kind of got her shit together.
No, you're right. Well, I mean,
two out of three women written well is pretty decent.
She figures out the entire plot of State of Decay in a chapter. She's very clever. All right, well, let's head into eSpace then, for the second episode on the trot. Actually, that's strange, isn't it? We're in War Escape now, the sequel to State of Decay. I know you loved him, Andrew, and we'll come to you in a second, but Luke, how did you find all the beheadings and spears coming out of people's chests and people being thrown into flames?
I do like the vampire sections quite a bit. I like State of Decay, so a bit of a sequel. Terry's known for just like, what did I write? I wrote those. I'll do sequels to them all. And then threequels, I guess. How many times does he use the War Games? Anyway.
Oh, no. Threequels? Tenquels? We do it a lot.
But I remember something you said in your Eight Doctors episode, Joe, and you're like, what do you mean villages? There's only one village in this. And then you read Blood Harvest and it's like, villages. Where? Okay. So I like these scenes mostly because they're from Benny's point of view. And I love Benice. So it's really well written and well put together. Her first reaction towards Romana is really funny. She thinks she's a bit of a pretentious and stuck up, which is funny. And I like them kind of getting along and then going on this adventure together. It's really cool. I think my favorite part of the vampire thing, might not even mention that, they involve those two. It's the peasants and the guards fighting, and then the vampires attack. And then Ivo's just like, picks up a soldier that he saves, like one of his enemies, like, hey, don't worry about us right now. Vampire time. Let's go. I thought that was really cool. The glaring thing I really don't like about the whole eSpace stuff is Romana herself.
Ooh, all right, that's a bit of a run with dodgy Romana depictions here, haven't we?
So, all right, at the end of Warrior's Gate, I got K-9 schematics for the TARDIS, chilling with Daryl's freeing slaves. Strikes off from her own, doesn't need the Doctor. She's going to go off and have great adventures. We read the Warrior's Gate book. Sets that up too, maybe not the TARDIS thing, but still. And then you have the two stories after it. I'm like, wow, I love this Romana. This Romana? Hey, did you build your TARDIS? No. Where's K-9? With the Daryls. the fuck did you do anything?
The bit like, where she says, where she says, she says at the end in the Gallifrey bit, I'm a Gallifrey girl at heart, you know, Doctor.
Oh, no.
Like, disgusting. No.
He clearly did not read John Lydecker's Warrior's Gate, did he?
Yeah. Well, he
clearly was like, well, I wrote State of Decay, Warrior's Gate. So, she starts off well. It feels like Romana. It's nice. And then I'm like, and then they're having conversations. Should we get the Doctor now? No, we shouldn't get the Doctor now. All right, what about now? I'm like, Romana! What are you doing? You know, you're the Doctor. You do this. You sort this out. Let's go. Yeah.
The bit where they go to the castle of the nearest lord, who has a vampire museum in his basement and inexplicably has never been attacked by the vampires. It's like, he's clearly evil. Like, Romana, you've learned nothing. What are you doing? Like, and the fact that Benny is like looking around being like, I'm pretty sure he's a vampire. Like, let's just dangle some garlic flowers in his face. And Romana's like, oh, no, he's a nice guy. He's a lord. Like, just trust him. It's like, ugh, awful.
So yes,
were you similarly displeased with Romana's depiction in Andrew?
Yeah, there are some really nice moments, and it's really nice to see her with Benny. I think it just annoys me when she's kind of a bit incapable, because it feels like her whole character trajectory in the TV series and her departure was about her learning to leave the Doctor and be her own person. And the fact that she kind of needs to call the Doctor up at the end is just a bit like...
Trouble is, though, right? It's I agree with everything you guys are saying, and I didn't really... I'm wondering if Lala Ward, you know, smoothed out some of the arrogance of Romana on the script page. Because I don't think she's written too differently, like the dialogue. But actually, she can smile and she can, you know, charm you in a scene. I don't object to taking her to Gallifrey, though, because I love that dark-haired... evil Romana from Shadows of Avalon and the Ancestor Cell. So I love the fact that we go there, and I just adore Lala Ward in the Gallifrey audios. Yeah. So like, I do sort of like her setting up there and doing her own thing, but how it's portrayed here, it's just appalling. She'd never do it in a million years. So it feels like a character, so it just feels wrong.
Yeah.
See, what I would do, I'm not a writer. Some dude doing a podcast, but you know what I would have done? What a nice... Maybe they did do it and I just don't know. But I would have had Romana build a TARDIS, and then, like, something happens. Oh, the Daleks have locked all their TARDISes. We don't know what to do. And Romana's just like, well, I don't have a Gallifreyan TARDIS, and I could sort this out. Something like that. I think that would have been cool, but no one wants... Like, even Lydecker, Mr. Gallagher changed that. No, she can just time wind with the Daleks. I'm like, but wouldn't it have been cool if she and K-9 had made that? I don't know why I'm harping on about this, but there's so many possibilities of her having a TARDIS that wasn't made in the standard kind of way. It would have been cool.
You know what Terrence Dix would have done? He would have covered it with a light. Oh, no, wait, he wrote this. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's what he always said about the 70s scripts. All right, well, then let's be positive for a second. Why did you like these scenes, Andrew? Why did you like this whole sort of East Space planet?
So I think the thing that worked really well was having an archaeologist character go back to the site of a previous Doctor Who story and do some archaeology. Like, so we have Benny kind of visiting the Dark Tower and excavating the bones of the great vampire. And it made me think of, like, you know, in like the Star Wars Force Awakens, where you've got like the desert planet with all the crashed spaceships and stuff, or like Prometheus, where it's kind of like taking this old franchise and kind of like just revisit it. Like, it's fan service, but you know, I'm a fan, so I like it. And yeah, I mean, I don't think it does much like radically different with like vampires or anything than State of Decay. I mean, you know, there's more violence and more stakes through the heart and like sex. It kind of ramps up the Hammer horror. But yeah, I kind of liked revisiting this planet and seeing how things have developed in the past 20 years or so that it's meant to be set. And yeah, I mean, I suppose maybe I'm just a bit basic, but I feel like, you know, Doctor Who meets vampires feels more Doctor Who than Doctor Who meets gangsters to me. This kind of like pushed more of my Doctor Who buttons, I think, than the gangster sections.
I did feel these sections felt more like... they did not feel like a new adventure to me at all. Just like a past Doctor adventure, a traditional past Doctor adventure, like you said, though, with a lot more gore. Because he does write the gothic horror atmospherically, I think.
Yeah, I really love the bit where Kalmar gets killed.
Oh, you bitch!
I mean, he's just so...
that cute old man.
He's a little weirdo. He's such a little weirdo with his weird little dreadlock sort of comb over. He's just like this kind of like weird little old man, and then he has such a violent death in this, and I really delighted in it.
I think Kara's watched Terror of the Vervoids, where the same actor who played Kalmar gets murdered horribly in the shower. Oh, we'll have a bit of that in this book. He dies well.
Yeah, let's stab him so hard he's attached to the wall.
This is oh, it's going, oh no, that nice old man. I'll tell you what, there was that very strange bit about politics, wasn't there, where they're talking about the House of Lords and the House of Commons. Well, don't worry, we'll just have the House of Lords of Commons. Well done.
I was like, that's a great idea.
Yeah, for God's sakes.
I feel like giving Terence the benefit of the doubt, I think maybe that one was quite firmly tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, where it was like, oh, you think I'm an old school Tory colonialist? Well, you know, I'm going to give you that. Like, here's the best style of government. Ha, ha, ha. See what
Terence,
you think
we need you now in charge of politics right now, you know, with your simplistic solutions. It was a fun line, yeah.
Yeah.
He's not above taking a piss, especially in this book as well, so you might be right.
Yeah, I think that was quite funny, that bit. There's lots, to give him his due, like, there's lots of little funny moments throughout this book.
We've made like a lot of sort of points of things that didn't sit well with us. It reads well though. Like, yeah, you know, despite the issues, I don't think, was this a chore at any point?
No, not at all. And even though it was full of loads of problematic shit, like, so is loads of old books. Like, I'm reading a lot of Agatha Christie at the moment, and that's awful.
Oh boy. Yeah.
But,
oh,
you know, really? There's still, you know, you can still appreciate it for what it is, even if you hate some of the politics in it. So, yeah.
I think this is still the author that captured all those kids with Target books, you know, back in the day. And it's kind of delightful that they're still, you know, dusting him down, getting him out of the cupboard whilst we're doing these, you know, innovative, edgy new adventures. Oh, Terence hasn't written one for a while. Come on, let's please the trad fans, you know. He'll put a right reference in there or two, I'm sure. You're sorry, Andrew, I'm sorry.
Have you watched that episode of Keys of Marinus or something?
Yeah.
This is a rollicking adventure. This is fun. Sees the old guy in the shed. What the hell is he doing in that story? There's some little things. I'm not sure where I'd put them, so I'll do it here. Like, at one point, the doc, didn't they reveal his name? And it's like, Doc McCoy. I'm like, okay, that's a little on the nose. Right after the wheezing and groaning gag, the next chapter, do you know what the next chapter's called?
Oh, go on.
Escape to Danger.
Oh, yes.
So, he's like, here I am going like, yeah, I know, wheezing, groaning. I've probably written that a billion times. Also, here's a chapter called Escape to Danger. So,
I'll have you know, I'm not going to tell you what it is because it's my pick and recommend for later. But this is a Target book, and I've just looked down the chapter listings. There is a Escape to the Unknown. Oof. So there was variations on the theme.
Very
close. Very bold.
There's also a scene where Ace, Benice, and Romana have to jump behind the sofa. It's called Quick Behind the Sofa, and I'm like, we're doing that too. All right.
You know, when I was doing the Eight Doctors, it was basically 200 pages of that, of just meta jokes, some that landed and some that, you know, disastrously went over a cliff.
Yeah. So there's all sorts of little bit things like that. There's a nice little reference. I didn't expect a reference to Sartre's No Exit in this, but there is. So that was kind of strange. That's but yeah, there's all sorts of weird kind of nuggets and things in here. So, you know,
I mean, he's clearly well read and he's clearly well watched. He's watched a lot of TV and he's watched a lot of movies. Yeah, so I'm never surprised when, like, what's the quotation at the end of Horror of Fang Rock? When things just turn up in his work that you're like, wow, that's quite profound. Well done.
Yeah, it is kind of a joy to read a book where the writer has clearly read more things than just Doctor Who books.
It's definitely not Garth Marenghi, that's for sure.
There aren't many new adventures where that is the case. Yeah. So, you know, take it while you can. Well, okay, before we head to Gallifrey then, anything else about the Chicago sections or the East Bay sections that you guys would like to cover? Andrew.
I've just noticed a bit in my notes. Another bit that I thought was really funny. The bit where where Lord Yarvan is going in and he's like haunting the other lord that he's just about to murder when he's talking about the lord's son, who was also a vampire. And he's like, oh, you and your... me and your son shared many of the same interests. And it's just like, okay. Brilliant.
Honestly, if Big Finish ever need a camp vampire, you're there, aren't you?
I'm going to put it on my business card, campire. but yeah, like just the kind of, yeah, just the little cheeky, stupid jokes about gay vampires in eSpace.
We love them. There was one bit that I was like, oh, there's the new Adventures Doctor, after I was having all this fun with him, you know, playing this sort of jazz bar owner who's trying to broker peace amongst all the gangs of Chicago. Once the peace breaks and then somebody breaks the peace and all the murders start happening, there's a line there, the murders seem to have given the Doctor a boost. I was like, really? Well, I'm so pleased he's happy that thousands of people have started dying over Chicago. But that is not exactly like off form for the new adventures, is it?
Yeah.
I found it strange.
Oh, I made another observation that just made me feel really old. So I was thinking about this being a sequel to State of Decay, which was 1980. This came out in 1994. So it would be like if they did a sequel to The Vampires of Venice now, which feels like it was 5 minutes ago to me.
Are you...
But yeah.
Oh, you're right, Luke.
We're all just crumbling to dust now like vampires.
Just like they do in State of Decay.
Yeah.
Oh, Matt, every time someone does that, I did Rose with someone recently, right? Who, that was his into Doctor Who, and he was a nipper. And, you know, I was like, oh, you still look like a nipper to me. He goes, no, I'm this age. I was like, oh, I'm so old. I'm ancient. We are the ancient ones. Although you both look very young, I've got to say.
Oh, thanks. The three who rule.
We are the three who rule. This book club, at least.
I do feel like my forehead gets bigger every time I read it. So there is that.
You're need a dreadlock comb over.
I've noticed your incisors are getting a bit longer as well. What's going on there?
That's right.
Well, any other points, Luke, about eSpace or Chicago?
Every other time they've done stories that involve eSpace, it's really hard to get in and out. It's really hard to get in and out. Seventh Doctor's like, no problem. I got the canine equation. Like, that's it. I'm like, wow, they didn't think of that in in that eSpace part of Davison's run, I guess. I won't spoil that. But yeah, so that's become trivial. I guess, like, come on. You couldn't have K-9 in it?
I know, right? Imagine him flying around like he does in that TV show, shooting vampires. Yeah. That'd be amazing.
So I was like, you're bringing all these things and characters back, and that's even before we get to the last portion that's like even more of that. You're bringing so much stuff back and making so many references. Like, Bernice is even like chilled out at a bar on Metabilis 3. That place has a bar?
He can't it's help spies, it. He cannot help bringing Metabilis 3, can he?
Yeah, it's his Tarrant. He's got to mention Metabilis 3 in everything. But yeah, that's about it. That's about it for me. I'm ready to...
Well, then let's... Please, would the pair of you enlighten me what the fuck happened in the last 30 pages? Over to you, Andrew.
Yeah, so it basically just turns into the Five Doctors fan fiction at the end of it. Mm-hmm. It's and then, I mean, I guess it's kind of a novelty having a bit set on Gallifrey in a new adventures novel. They hadn't really done that before this point. But yeah, you kind of just, it's like, here's Chancellor Flavia and here's the Tomb of Rassilon. And then I can't think of an ending of this, so let's just do the Five Doctors again. Oh, and here's Barusa and he's all right now. It's like, what?
The weird thing is right, having done the Eighth Doctors before this, I'm like, hang on a minute. All of this is like in the 280 pages of it. He's gone, oh, you know what? Those are all great ideas. I'm going to write another book all about those things.
plagiarist.
Yeah, it's just a bit odd. I just don't really know why he couldn't have thought of set it on Gallifrey still, but done something a little bit different. And like the villains, the sort of triumvirate, they're shit. And like
they're well, so shit.
And he does that again with the players, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He never throws an idea away.
Maybe it's been a hot minute since I've read it. It has. But I'm reading this book and I'm thinking, where the fuck is Wrath? Roth? Rat? Ruth? R?
Who?
How do you say that? You'll find out. She's at the end of this book, Mr. Jones. She's in Goth Opera. Sorry.
Okay. I did wonder how these were going to tie together.
And very loosely, it turns out.
Yeah, extraordinarily loosely. Like, I can imagine if Paul Cornell had written this with, no offense to Terrence, but any other New Adventures author, they'd be on Rekkard's Doctor Who. They'd be on emailing each other going, all right, I'm going to do this bit. Oh, that'll tie into what I'm going to do here. And then Uncle Terry's just like, I'm not fucking doing that. I can't see him doing that.
I could see him saying exactly that as well. Subtle parallels of characterization? No. Gallifrey, Barusa, the Western Warrior Robot, lovely. That's what they want.
I'll put a little thing in at the end and you can tie it like that. And that's... So I reckon in the next book that we do, Paul's going to reference Blood Harvest more than Blood Harvest will reference Goth Opera. Like, but it's very New Adventures where the Doctor's like, yeah, I've already done it. It's all good. But... Wrath is crap. The brother of Goth. He is
the brother of Goth.
Brother of Goth.
I'm Wrath, brother of Goth. Yeah.
Deadly Assassin's his other favorite as well, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like the Simpsons episode where they have Sideshow Bob's brother. He's just like a shit version of Sideshow.
Yeah.
That's right. So I keep expecting, all right, now we're on Gallifrey. I know R-U-A-T-H. I don't know why I have problems with that.
Wrath?
I'm just going to call her Wrath because maybe that's it, Wrath, and she's baddie. Yeah. So, yeah. All the time. No. So I was expecting, all right, here she is. Here she's coming. And then she'll probably escape. And the Doctor will be like, because I remember the end of this one vividly for some reason of him just going like, nah, I've already sorted that. That's one of the few things I remembered. So I was like, where is she? Where is she? Where is she? She's in like one paragraph at the end of the book talking to Ramada and that's it. I'm like, oh, so it's a kind of tenuous.
Less of a prologue then, more of sort of a hiccup.
Yeah, so... Yeah. I'll reference what you're doing, Paul, but, you know, that's about it.
Yeah, and the way that they... Because Lord Yarvan is also one of the villains of Goth Opera, but the way that he gets him, like, the way that he gets him into that book is just, oh, let's... he's stowed away in a box, and he jumps out of a window. And he just, like, it's so stupid. It's, like, just zero effort on Terrence's part.
Paul's like, thanks, Terrence. Thanks, man.
Yeah, I was expecting like, oh, maybe Lord Yarvan is like a New York, a Chicago gangster who's been turned into a vampire and he's gone to the vampire planet, and then he's going to come back and be this villain. And, no, it's just some guy in a box.
I was just waiting, because we were have these parallel storylines taking place for the bulk of this book. It's like you said, Andrew. I was just waiting for the point where the two of them merged into one. It's like, no, there's just someone stirring up shit in both of them. Let's go to Gallifrey. I was like, okay.
And what... I didn't really understand what even happened to Agonol. So they wake Rassilon up and then his magic mind powers just sort of destroy him and that's the end. It's like, oh, okay, so Rassilon can do that now. Great.
Because it's the rules of the game, I guess. Agonol thought he was winning, but he who wins shall lose. Thanks, Terry.
It's not the only note I made about that last section is Terrence so obsessed with the Five Doctors and the Time Scoop because he's lazy or because that's when he felt most popular
with Doctor Who fans, because the reaction to the Five Doctors was amazing, right? Like, everyone loved it pretty much at the time.
I think he's always
trying to find that moment again of like where they love me.
I feel like, Joe, you might be the person to answer this, but there are some songs in...
I wasn't around, all right? I was born in 80, okay?
82 here, so it's okay. No, it's not that. There are some songs that I think of, like Let's Dance by Bowie, maybe a couple, London Calling by The Clash. I haven't met many people who don't like those songs. And The Five Doctors, I feel like, is like that for Doctor Who. I haven't really encountered anyone that's like, The Five Doctors? Nah, that's shit. I think everyone knows that it's not perfect. It has this problems here and there, but it's like a really fun celebration. Have you found that, Mr. Joe? Has someone said to you, The Five Doctors is just shit?
I don't know when you start calling me Mr. Joe, but I love it. Someone did say to me once that it was like Last of the Summer Wine filmed in Wales. Because it's just a lot of old people walking around a Welsh quarry. I think that was in a book, actually. I don't think anyone said to me. No, generally speaking, no. Everyone here loves it, right?
Yeah. I was like, Andrew, don't prove me wrong now by saying The Five Doctors sucks. But everyone kind of likes it, whether you watched it when it aired or like me on VHS over and over and over again.
And you know what? I bloody love the Rest of Warrior Robot. That sequence where he takes out all those sidemen is amazing. But I just don't need him. But he pops up in The Eight Doctors. He pops up in World Game. Like, he just can't let it go, can he?
Maybe that's it. Like, that fuzzy spot that The Five Doctors has for so many fans. It's like, you know what? I'm going to put lots of references in. People be like, oh, yeah, Five Doctors.
Yeah. I remember they do this in Zagreus as well, don't they? They go back to the Dark Tower and there's stuff about mirrors leading to E-Space or something or other. So, yeah, other people have done it and sort of mind the story. But, yeah, I think maybe it felt more... I don't know, maybe it was bad in both times that they did it. Maybe you just shouldn't go back. I think maybe because Five Doctors feels quite special and the excuse of doing all of that is it's an anniversary. And I feel like if you're going to use those tools to bring... It's just a bit lazy to use the tools from the Five Doctors to do those same things again, I guess.
I mean, they also use the
harp.
Oh, yeah.
As well, they use that. So, yeah.
I feel like The Eight Doctors is just a lot of wouldn't it be fun moments. You know, wouldn't that be fun, you know, using those things. Although I get why it's State of Decay and The Five Doctors. It wouldn't be quite the same if, you know, the scenes were on the alien planet were set on, I don't know, Carfel from Time Lash. And at the end, we go to the Anti-Anathema Universe Quarry from The Three Doctors. You know, I see why he's choosing the things that he's choosing because they make us warm inside, you know. They are our sweet spots.
It feels like maybe they could have gone to like the secret vampire cult chamber on Gallifrey and not the Dark Tower, like done something a bit different and not just had like three little losers as the baddies. Like,
you know, that's the third time on this episode that you've made plot suggestions for this book. I'm going to commission you to do a rewrite of Blood Harvest because your version sounds amazing.
Big Finish. I'll do the UK version.
Yes. Are they doing that alongside Goth Opera?
No. I don't think... If they are, they haven't announced it.
Oh, I mean, you could do it. You've got Lisa Bowman, Sophie Aldred and Sylvester McCoy. Perfect. Well, let's draw our conversation on Blood Harvest to an end. Where I think we've sort of been more negative than positive, but I want to reiterate what a smooth read this is and how much fun I had with it, despite all these problems that we've talked about, despite the plotting problems and the sexism, you know, and the occasionally sort of lines that make you wince. I did read this fast, like The Eight Doctors, which has a similar amount of problems, and had a ball with it. So I suppose if the goal is to entertain, I was very entertained.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's an entertaining novel. It's a good pulpy slice of Doctor Who, but just one that hasn't aged very well.
No. Probably say that with a lot of NAs. I don't know. I haven't reread. I want to reread so many of them just to see if they hold up.
But, well, don't you worry. We've got the rest of our lives.
That's right. So. I'll say if you're reading all of the new adventures, don't skip this one. There's a lot of fun in it. Great characterization of all three regulars. So I like the Seventh Doctor in this. Benice is great. And Old Ace is good in this. Like, I really like her. It fits her to be like a gun mole in 30 Chicago. And she gets to shoot people in the face. And out of all the... It's weird. Like, out of all the things we've said about Terry, who, hey, we grew up reading your books and now you're doing sexy, dated, weird stuff. I don't mind that Ace is just like, all right, Deckard, let's go. And then just disappear for a little bit. And you know what's going on. But, like, I didn't mind. I don't think so. I don't like everything. Like, but the three TARDIS regulars, if the three TARDIS regulars are good, it doesn't matter if it's a book, a TV show, or an audio, if all the regulars are good, doesn't matter if the story's not 100% perfect, because the regulars will just kind of carry it for you and bring it through. And it's kind of well written. The 30s are really well evoked. And I like the vampire kind of creepy vibe. And that's that gory fight in the forest. I don't know. There's some great visuals in it too. So it's good. Good book.
None of this should be together, but all the individual elements kind of work. So who cares? Although, can I finish off? I'm going to read out the last line of my review on Doctor Who Reviews, because I think this sort of sums it up well. It's all about us. It is all as thought-provoking and as deep as you can imagine. But any new adventure that ends with Ace off on a date, the Doctor playing piano, and Bernice singing the blues gets my vote.
Oh,
that's kind of fair, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to know, Joe, though, you said that you haven't read Goth Opera before. So, having read Blood Harvest, what are you expecting from Goth Opera?
Well, I'm expecting a ton of Chicago gangsters somehow to be involved with the Fifth Doctor, Nyssa. Well, I'm expecting Nyssa to be turned into a vampire, because every cover I've seen, she's got fangs and sort of... There's a bit of controversy about that, about the blood on her face.
I think W.H. Smith refused to stock it when they saw the proof of the cover, so it had to be very hastily repainted.
But apart from that, well, I know a character's going to appear in it, because someone down here has just spoiled it for me. She didn't register at all in this book, so I'm hoping she does in the other one. I've no idea. Paul Cornell is not for me the obvious choice to write a vampire story. You know, he writes very thoughtful sort of...
Or a missing adventure, to be honest.
Mind fuck books, doesn't he? Like, he's in your head. So I have no idea. I think it's going to be good because its reputation is great. And I think kicking off the Past Doctor adventure with a Paul Cornell book is such a savvy move. So, well, let's find out. I'll pick it up tomorrow. But of course, before we head off and read Goth Opera, each of us, not together, although I don't mind doing that if you want to, let's do our recommends for this week. And this time we started with Andrew last time, I think. So let's start with Luke.
Okay, so I've heard Angie and Fitz mentioned all over the place. Yes, I do love Fitz, everyone, and everybody knows that, I guess. But
and I love Angie, even though no one else seems to. But
I like her too.
How have we not covered her yet? Then
she brings an element of like, what if a real person was in the TARDIS, and her reactions always felt like. It's like, what if a viewer who didn't like Doctor Who was in the TARDIS? That's Angie for me. And I like that. It's kind of cool. I wouldn't say she's got these Tegan vibes, but she's got that
Don't you think?
Yeah. She can rub people that way. I guess
she's a total cow bag at times, Luke. Tegan.
I guess I kind of just get along with those kind of characters because I like traveling. Sometimes I'm grumpy and sometimes I complain all day and they'll be like, Luke, did you have fun? Oh my God, it was the best day of my life.
Do you? You are grumpy and complain. I never see you grumpy. Oh, mind you, we're always talking about Doctor Who, aren't we?
I get to talk about Doctor Who for an hour or so. So I'm very...
Fair enough.
To people who don't go, again, you know. So my
until we make you read a book you really hate, and then, you know, we might see that side of you.
Oh, God. It's Sky Pirates. All right, so...
Oh, coming soon from Hamster Book Club.
That's right. That actually might be a good idea. It might actually get me through it. I might actually find something I like it a bit. I'm going for Timeless. It's in my garage, so it's hidden somewhere and I haven't got it out. But I remember really liking Timeless. I don't know why. Maybe it's because he's done a couple stories that are just okay. And maybe he gets tarred with that okay brush. But I think Stephen Cole is a pretty decent writer. His stories always move along pretty well. And I remember just really being engaged with Timeless. It kind of ends a few story threads and stuff with the Eighth Doctor novels. So as I was reading them month after month, I'm really digging that. And it's also a really kind of cool exit for Angie, I guess. So this is Angie's final story as well. So I think she gets a pretty good send-off. I would say most book companions stay for too long. I'm looking at Bernice, and yes, Fitz. Did he need to be in like almost every single Eighth Doctor novel? Probably not. But it was nice to have a companion in the books, created by the books, get a pretty decent start, middle, and kind of end point. And I guess I'm a weirdo, Joe, because I like Angie too. She was something different as well. And she brings like a different perspective to things, I guess, because there are most companions are just white people. So it was really cool to get like a different vibe and experience and just see things through different eyes with Angie. So yeah, Timeless by Stephen Cole.
She was so absurdly competent. That's what I loved about her. She had no life experience of going on these insane adventures where they're in danger all the time. So she was always sort of tripping out and doing all those things. But when she was called upon to be smart, gosh, she was amazing. Anachrophobia, where she's figuring things out, trading futures. I thought at her best, she was like the smartest book companion. Do you know, in Timeless, right, the bit I always remember, I think I talked about it in another one, where that terrible man, Daniel, he's going around hurting all the women, and the doctor realises what he's up to, goes and has an interview with him, and he calls him up, somebody up, and goes, oh, by the way, and then literally snaps his arm and goes, we're going to need an ambulance, and just walks away. Man, oh, man, it's great. Anyway, sorry, yeah. Andrew, what's your recommend for this week?
Just want to say that I also love Angie, and she's probably my favourite books companion. I think
nice, good choice.
And I think a little bit like Sam Jones, I don't know why I'm going off at this tangent, but just the Angie loving. Like, you could tell that some of the writers didn't really like her and didn't really get her and didn't make the best use of her and made her do silly things, which made people dislike her. So, I think Angie, when she's well written, is the best books companion.
Then you are going to choose our first Angie book. So have a think about that, all right? And we'll add it to the list, but choose a goodie.
He's already done Mad Dogs and Englishmen, so you can't choose that one.
Oh, yeah. She's so great at that one.
We need a list of all the ones which have been done.
I shall get it compiled, don't worry.
Anyway, so the book I've chosen, I've gone non-fiction again, but it is linked to Blood Harvest. I have chosen The Who Adventures by David Howe. Which came out maybe 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago.
I have never heard of this. So
you've never heard of Joe? No. You would love this. So this is like the Target book that was also by him, which told you the whole publishing history of the Target books. This is that, but for the new adventures and the missing adventures.
Wow.
So it started life as a series in Doctor Who magazines, like, probably more than 20 years ago, there was a series about the new adventures and the missing adventures. So this takes those articles and expands them. So it covers every book. It's got every cover. And then it's also got, so this is the stuff that I love. People who followed my Twitter account will know that I love all the insights into the cover art and draft stuff. And when I when I was covering the new adventures, I was like rooting through old Doctor Who magazines and fanzines to try and find as much visual stuff as I could. And often there were like a few sketches of covers and things like that, or alternate covers and things like that were available. This book has all of it. So I think for pretty much every cover, there's a draft sketch, there's all the illustrations from the preludes, and it also tells you the story of the creation of the new adventures, the writing of them, all of the authors, all of the missing adventures. If you're into the Doctor Who books, this is an essential
book. Sounds like my Bible.
It's yeah, brilliant. It yeah, and I wish someone would do this for the BBC books as well, because I feel like that's an equally interesting story that's kind of overlooked.
So I guess that's two books I've got to steal from BBC books.
David J. Howe, we're waiting for you, all right? I know people who know him, so I'll get them to prod him.
But yeah, 10 out of 10.
The BBC one,
we may be the only three people buying it, but you know.
There's more obscure stuff out there on Doctor Who.
How much is that book? Right.
I think it's quite pricey. I think it's about 30 quid or something.
Oh, that's not too bad, though.
But yeah, it's an absolute essential purchase. It brilliant.
Sounds like the equivalent of my Bible for Finish Big, which is Benjamin Cook, the Untold, the Big Finish story, you know, which has got fabulous trivia in it and all the bitch fights that happened.
It is so indiscreet, that book. I love it.
Oh, it's wonderful, isn't it? The fights between Lance Parkin and Jonathan Blunt and Gary Russell are amazing.
Oh, so in fact, this book is where I got the little nugget about it potentially being two books and then it turning into goth opera. So it doesn't cover each book in massive detail unless it's kind of a really significant arc. So there's a lot of stuff about like So Vile a Sin and what happened with the manuscript and all of that, why it wasn't published in order. But then some of the other books will be like a small paragraph, but there's like loads of artwork and quotes from the authors and Peter Darville Evans and Rebecca Levine. So yeah. I'm fangirling about it. I love it.
I'm going to charge it to the Hamster Extra account that I've got as research purposes. 30 quid, that's fine. Well, for my recommend, I'd like to just read a paragraph from a book because it is by Terence Dicks, and I just want to show just how he could capture kids so perfectly back in the day. He was a dead man running. He ran blindly, desperately through the swirling green fog, deep sobbing breaths rasping into his tortured lungs. He knew there was little hope. Somehow, he had been separated from the others in the ambush, and now his enemies were hunting him. Without checking his run, he glanced back over his shoulder. Shadowy figures were flitting through the dunes behind him. What book is that?
Death to the Daleks?
Oh yeah, baby.
I think I only got that from the dunes.
A perfectly formed 125 page target novel, which takes, I love Death to the Daleks, but it's a ropey script, pretty much salvaged by some good direction, and he takes that book and makes it just the most brilliant adventure. He does a little bit of pruning of logic, you know, he actually starts tying things together that Terry actually got to episode 3 and went, well, we'll just do the crystal maze now for a little bit at the end, whereas Terrence actually gives it a, you know, some reasoning. But he just captures, like, you know, 125 pages, he does 3 chapters per episode. And it just runs by, full of like danger and excitement, and that economic prose that Terence can do like nobody else. I mean, and look at the cover as well. Yeah. I mean, one of the most iconic Doctor Who images ever. I just love this book and how he managed to take stories that didn't always translate well on the screen, like Horns of Nymon and things like that, and turned them into really exciting Doctor Who adventures. We've ripped him a little bit in this episode, you know, we've taken the piss quite a bit, but we can never forget what he brought to Doctor Who and to Doctor Who fiction as well. And this is a great example of why. It's just a glorious, it's a pot boiler, but it's full of excitement and I love it to pieces. So everyone get, I don't know if the audio of that one been done yet.
They must have done it.
They started with a lot of Terrans, didn't they? Yeah. Probably read by Jeffrey Beavers or somebody fabulous like that. Well, I mean, we've alluded to it quite a few times throughout the episode, but why don't you tell people again where we're going next?
Oh, we're goth opera, everyone.
I thought you'd forgotten then for a second.
No, Sorry, everybody else who wanted to do it. kind of not. It's on brand for me because I'm a Davison nut anyway. So this is like, what is this, our second Davison book?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, pretty happy about that. So, yeah. I don't know. I just thought, maybe, did I come up to you with the idea first? Maybe that's why. I don't know.
I think you did, yeah. No, you definitely asked me first.
I'd like, because look, everyone, I lost my shit when they announced Goth Opera was going to be adapted. So, yeah. And I was, first thing I did was, Charity, they're doing Goth Opera. And she's like, A, what's Goth Opera?
What are you talking about?
And two, I just, okay, fine, Doctor Who audience, go away. the second thing I did was get onto our chat and be like, they're doing Goth Opera, oh my God.
Thank you for thinking of it. Andrew, have you ever had that moment, you know, where something's been announced and you've told your other half and they've been like, yeah, all right, thanks. Yeah, I didn't need to know that.
I think when the new trailers drop for the box sets, I'm always like, oh my God, they brought back Leela, it's so exciting. And he's just like, sure, great.
Mine was when Katie Manning was announced to be in Sarah Jane Adventures. I rang my ex-husband at work in tears going, it's going to be Katie Manning and Elizabeth Sladen together. And he's like, go away. Like, you just didn't get it. There we go. Well, I would like to ask two of you a question, though, before we go in, because you've both read this before and you're about to read it again. Like, do you remember loving this?
It's one of the few that I've read twice. Ooh. So, yeah, I think I really loved this one. And I was also very into Buffy as a teenager. I feel like this is like Doctor Who does Buffy, but like a few years before Buffy was a thing.
Oh, interesting, because I always thought Vampire Science was Doctor Who does Buffy.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that too. Guess Doctor Who did Buffy twice.
Cornell definitely watched some Buffy, though, I'm telling you. And you, Luke?
Yeah, I remember really liking it. The first missing adventure, it's got my doctor on it, it's got Tegan, Nissa with as a vampire on the cover. I remember there's a few things I have very vivid memories of. But
if these are spoilers,
I'm not even going to mention them. That's bad enough that I had mentioned Wrath, and now you're just like, how dare you mention Wrath?
Who? Oh, that person that was in one paragraph.
Yeah, Wrath. I'll get the pronunciation prepared before we talk about it. But I got some vivid memories of it, but I think it's still going to be largely on the fresh side. Me. Yeah.
I'd be interested to know, actually, because I've recently read Vampire Science, whether Kate Allman, who would have known this stuff, actually put any references to this stuff in that. I might check that out as well. Oh, good brief research. It's all good fun, though, isn't it? Guys, thank you, as ever, for your time, for reading the books, for coming on and sharing your thoughts about this. I'll just say, until next time.
Bye.
Ha 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 ha!